The most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul? What's up, Paul? Most interactive show, and really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
We were talking about Rolling Stone's big list of the best TV shows of all time. Another issue I had, Chappelle's Show being 69th, nice, much higher on that list. I think it's one of the best sketch comedy shows ever. It was behind Key and Peele. I like Key and Peele. I would not say Key and Peele is better than Chappelle's Show. Absolutely not. Nope. I think Saturday Night Live was 15th. I guess you're going off of like the 80s and the 90s for that, because I don't feel like Saturday Night Live has really been the institution it once was. They had a bunch of late night TV shows on too. I think Johnny Carson was on it. I think Dave Letterman was on it. So you had that.
I don't think those should be included.
I agree. It's a totally different genre. I think Letterman's show, if you would ask somebody that watched those, because I never have and have no interest in watching a late night comedy show with like a 3-minute interview, they would probably tell you that Letterman did the most stuff, as far as like actually being a little bit dangerous, and that Jay Leno played it extremely safe, and that Johnny Carson, well, he's Johnny Carson, which is, you know, just nostalgia kicking in from some of the boomers out there. Nothing against you. I've never seen Johnny Carson except for in like commercials of like, you could have the best of Johnny Carson on VHS for only 3 payments of $19.99. Those made for TV commercials back in the day were fantastic. Jose Altuve had 2 home runs on Tuesday night at the game that I went to at Minute Maid Park. He had the night off yesterday. I saw this tweet yesterday that was extremely complimentary of Jose Altuve, and I got pissed off about it. It reads, Jose Altuve with a .298, .387, .531 slash line this season, 28 homers, 18 steals on 9 attempts and 100 runs for his career, has the following numbers. 1,929 hits, 983 runs, 192 homers, 279 steals, a .307 lifetime average, 3 batting titles, led the American League in hits 4 times, 5 silver sluggers, picked for 8 All-Star teams. Why should I be mad about a tweet like that, right? Well, it came from Buster Olney. And all of a sudden, it seems like we're getting a bit of whitewashing or mea culpa for Jose Altuve after he got absolutely slandered over the course of the Astros sign-stealing scandal. There's a lot we'll never know about that sign-stealing scandal. I don't know if I'm naive in believing Carlos Correa, who was so emphatic in his defense of Jose Altuve, and some of the other Astros who said like Altuve was the guy who was pissed off whenever we tried to give him an edge by tipping off the pitches. I want to believe it. Skeptical, cynical person in me should probably say, nah, I don't know. But Altuve was slandered by a biased Yankees Twitter account, John Boy Media, who zoomed in on a bunched part of his jersey and emphatically declared that a buzzer was there. And that led to Altuve being asked about like why he doesn't like his jersey to get ripped off, a weird defense as to why he doesn't like his jersey ripped off by, I think Carlos Correa was the only one to publicly face it. But the guy got slandered. And he got ripped along with the rest of the Astros, but he specifically, despite being as awesome as he was from 2014 to 2017, where he led the American League in hits all 4 years and also led the American League in steals the first 2 of those years, 2014 and 2015, he was slandered at a level that steroid-era players weren't. Were people really, and let's go back in time, we didn't have social media, were people really outraged about, say, Barry Bonds and how dominant he was? Did people ever say to themselves, like, this guy clearly is a disgusting, despicable person? Maybe people that write about baseball because they didn't like their one-on-one interactions with him. But Altuve was always, Barry Bonds was always appreciated as one of the best in the game. You could say the same thing about a lot of the steroid-era players. Maybe not so much Sammy Sosa, but I think Mark McGwire still got his due for what he was doing in Oakland before that with Jose Canseco, and of course for what he did with the St. Louis Cardinals. And Rafael Palmeiro got ripped because he lied to Congress. They lied to us. Is that really the end of the world? But Altuve got completely destroyed in this Astros sign-stealing scandal. And I don't think a lot of people that covered baseball nationally did anything remotely enough to defend the guy, even when there were people that were saying that he didn't do anything. And again, maybe I'm naive or something like that. I'm of the belief, though, that much like in the steroid era, a lot of people were doing it, that a lot of people were stealing signs. And Altuve specifically got crushed more than anyone. When I was up in Seattle, the amount of disrespect that was shown to Altuve up there pissed me off, and I didn't know what to do. Here I am working at a Seattle sports radio station, and whenever I spoke about the Astros, and I defended them regularly when I was on that program, saying, like, I know for a fact other teams were doing this. Like, I talked with Lance McCullers, who said that the Dodgers were so paranoid of sign-stealing that that the Astros were doing because they were doing the same thing themselves, and there were so much cross-ups in Game 7 of the 2017 World Series. Go back and watch it and see all the wild pitches and all the weird things that happened over the course of that game in particular. Like, both teams were doing something in that game. The Astros obviously were using a trash can, but it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different when the other team is doing the same thing. I don't know. I feel like maybe the playing field's a little bit leveled. But Altuve regularly has been just smeared. And now all of a sudden the national writers are like, wow, Altuve's had a good career. He had a good career before the sign-stealing scandal took place. Like, this was the first good player on the Astros, starting in 2014. Like, the first definitively awesome player. And now all of a sudden, like, people are walking it back. Well, the damage is done. You see people in any other city, and you ask them about Jose Altuve, and a lot of them will growl, raise an eyebrow. And there's a part of me which, as a person who follows the Astros, a person who roots for the Astros, who says, like, who cares what, you know, the sheep are saying about the lion? But at the same time, he was dragged in a way, along with the rest of this team, that I felt merited at least some defense or at least some follow-up. And instead, you had a lot of writers who I think see things through a from New York perspective that kind of sat back and did nothing. That tweet by Buster Olney, to me, is a walking it back moment. And I didn't like it. I really didn't. It pissed me off. He's finally complimenting him all these years later. The damage is done. People are now looking at Jose Altuve as if he is not a great player. And I mean, I think there's a strong case to be made that he's the best Astro in team history because of the World Series that he won, because of what he was able to do, helping change the culture of this franchise. This was a guy who I remember in 2014 had said, like, look, we're approaching things this next year. We're in the playoffs. He said that the year before. I mean, nuts. But because of the way that I think a lot of people kind of just stood idly by and were like, yeah, whatever, I'm not going to do my due diligence. Screw that team. Screw the cheaters. Here we are. I didn't like it. A couple of questions, 713-780-3776, and on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Will Altuve get to 3,000 hits? I've actually wondered about this because it's going to be hard. You would think if he can stay healthy, of course, you feel pretty good about it. He's 32 years old. There haven't been any serious injuries yet. Is that frame going to hold up? And the only reason I wonder about that is because of another guy who I feel like in some ways is rather similar. Dustin Pedroia, smaller second baseman, similar kind of like a lot of power in his swing considering what a small guy he is. All of a sudden, Pedroia's body fell apart not that long ago, and it wasn't like he was ancient by any means. I'm hoping that Altuve doesn't have that happen to him. But, I mean, shoot, he's going to have 2,000 hits at 33 years old. Can he get 700 over a career that you will hope lasts until he's 38, 39? You would think so. Like, I thought for a moment that there was a chance going into this year, and I fell in the same guilty party as I think Jeremy Branham, that maybe this was a year where Altuve could decline, but he didn't. He's adapted his game. He has become more of a power player. He has adapted to modern baseball, becoming a guy who's slugging almost 30 home runs in a year. That tweet bothered me. Maybe I should be a little bit less sensitive, But it does feel like all of a sudden now national media folks are walking it back when it comes to Jose Altuve. And legitimately, that pisses me off. Where were you for the last 3 years? You're really telling me that this guy wasn't a good player when he was good before the sign-stealing scandal and he's been good afterwards? It took you this long to be like, oh, wait, he's good. 2020, the pandemic season, oh, wow, he's lost a step or something like that. That was a weird year for everybody. Still saw the Astros in the ALCS, but come on. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, I said it last week, like the Texans should beat the Chicago Bears because the Bears are bums. Well, I'm not going to say it about the Texans beating the San Diego / Los Angeles Superchargers on Sunday, but I feel like the Chargers have had maybe the most depressing history in the NFL. We'll talk about the San Diego screwed per Chargers next, right here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
What a song.
San Diego, Superchargers, San Diego.
Chargers.
San Diego, Superchargers, San Diego. Chargers, Chargers.
We will find every single fight song for NFL teams. It's very unfortunate that the Houston Texans fight song is It's Football Time in Houston by Clay Walker. I love to play it. But you all know I'm playing it ironically. I hope you do. I hope you know that I don't seriously enjoy it. I have just come to hear it so much working over at the flagship station where they play it whenever you feel like you were snapping out of a topic, talking about the Texans into something else, sort of like you're the Manchurian candidate or someone who's been brainwashed. All of a sudden, Clay Walker, the music just starts playing. I don't think a lot of the people over at the flagship realize this, but yeah, you'd be walking down the halls and you're thinking to yourself like, huh, I wonder what I'm going to do after work. And they know because they have eyes everywhere there and they would play it. And all of a sudden you just snap back to attention. The next thing you knew, 4 hours had passed by and you were talking about whether or not Case Keenum was the next greatest quarterback in Texans history. And you were like, did I really just do that? I don't know where I am. What am I doing with my hands? This was the thing. Now, I know a lot of people there will tell you otherwise, but like, no, they didn't tell us what to say. They just played that music, and all of a sudden, you're like, yes, Matt Schaub, he is good. Yes. J.J. Watt, better than Lawrence Taylor. Yes. Texans going to the Super Bowl? Yes. You didn't even know. But there's a lot of great fight songs across the NFL. The Chargers fight song is the best. And it's good that they have at least that, Sean Mapes, because they are easily one of the most depressing teams in NFL history. Who would you say off the top of your head is number one as far as depressing NFL teams? Other than the Texans.
I would go like the Chargers. There's like an inner circle where it's like Chargers, Lions, Vikings, Browns.
I think that the Vikings definitely have a case. Because they lost three Super Bowls in a row.
Yeah.
They had the Gary Anderson missed field goal against the Falcons when they were a 15-1 team and should have played in that Super Bowl against the Broncos. I'm still mad about that because they had Randall Cunningham still alive. They had Chris Carter. They had Randy Moss. That was a fun freaking team.
Yeah. For me, I'm always more sympathetic to the teams like the Vikings and the Chargers to a certain extent who like are good, talented, get very close, and then always get punched in the groin.
Yes, they
same
do.
Same with the Falcons, actually. The Falcons are similar to that.
Yeah, the Falcons have had it pretty bad. The 28-3 loss. Like they've largely been irrelevant, but they lost that Super Bowl.
And the Walter Payton man of the year getting arrested the night before the Super
Bowl. Eugene Robinson. You know what, though? But like that made him more the man of the year. Like, but the man.
The man.
The dog of the year.
Man of the year.
He had that dog in him, as they say. I hate that saying. It's become a little bit played out. The Bills are also up there. The Bills lost four Super Bowls in a row.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
That's brutal. And, I mean, one of them was at least close against the Giants. They weren't actually close to the other ones. The NFC was a wagon, way better than the AFC for such a long time. But since then, the AFC has generally been better. Let's go back through some of the worst moments in Chargers history. 2006, 14-2, as they play the Texans on Sunday. Tom Brady and the Patriots are trailing. They're down a touchdown, if I'm not mistaken, but they're driving. Brady throws a pass over the middle of the field. Here is what happened.
Brady throws in, he's intercepted for the third time, and the ball comes out. Troy Brown reached in there and knocked the ball loose. Can you believe it? New England recovers.
That game was one of my favorite, as a Patriots fan, non-Super Bowl victories, because they had no business beating that 14-2 Chargers team that had LaDainian Tomlinson. I hate that LT got that LT nickname. It confuses me. But LaDainian Tomlinson was in the midst of a monster year. Phillip Rivers had just taken over. They had Sean Lights Out Merriman playing at his best. That team was awesome. And had they played the Indianapolis Colts, who they owned in that decade, they really had the Peyton Manning number. I think they stopped the Colts' undefeated season as well. They were really good. They would have beaten the Bears in that Super Bowl just as easily as the Indianapolis Colts did, probably even more. And yet they blew this game against a pretty underwhelming Patriots team in 06. That was a massive, sad moment for them. I think Marty Schottenheimer got fired because they were one and done. And it's a shame. I mean, like, Marlon McCreeve, who had that interception, fumbled the game away. Can you really blame that on a head coach? Like Troy Brown, the receiver for the Patriots, who was very good at a lot of things, never great at any of them, rips the ball out, and that's why they end up making it onto the next round of the playoffs. Another moment. This one might not be as memorable, but in 2012, the cursed, now Los Angeles Chargers, were playing the future Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens. If you take a look at the final season standings, San Diego finished 7-9. The Ravens, they finished 10-6. They won the AFC North by tiebreaker over the Cincinnati Bengals. Anyway, it's 4th-and-29 for the Baltimore Ravens. With time running out, this happened.
Shotgun formation for Flacco. 1:59 to go. This is your ball game for Baltimore. Flacco in the pocket. Dump off. Rice has some room, but can he really get to that first down line? Rice stays on his feet. Oh, Ray Rice! Incredible! Ray Rice has done it. A first down for the Ravens with 1:40 to go.
I don't know how that one got converted. And at least it wasn't a playoff moment. But look, we have it tough here in Houston. I feel like Chargers fans have, if they exist, the ones that do, and I know Mr. Brostash on Twitch is a Chargers fan, they've really been through the ringer. And it's not just that. There's Super Bowl 29, which they lost by 1,000 points. Remember Stan Humphries? 49-26, San Francisco. That team took down the Chargers. You also have had a series of unfortunate injuries over the last couple of years that make you feel like the franchise who moved to Los Angeles only to have the Los Angeles Rams move to Los Angeles and, despite drafting Jared Goff, win the Super Bowl more recently than them, even though the Chargers actually seem like they found the right quarterback and had Phillip Rivers before. Even with all of that said, the Chargers, man, it's just a hard life for them. You've seen Derwin James get injured like every other second. Joey Bosa just got hurt. He's on the injured reserve. They just lost one of their tackles, Slater, right? Slaughter, their left tackle. They have a ton of injuries right now. And by the way, Justin Herbert is dealing with like an awful rib injury. They cannot get a break. They really can't, Sean. I remember seeing after this game that they lost on Thursday, on a Sunday to Jacksonville, thinking to myself, man, like, the Texans are really getting them at the right time. How will they screw it up this time? But they're really getting them at the right time. Like, Justin Herbert's dead. All the Chargers' best players are injured. I really want to say that the Texans have a chance on Sunday, and yet I have no faith, I have no confidence, I have no optimism, I have nothing.
I think if the Bears game hadn't just happened last week, if they, you know, had the Colts game where you can at least go, oh yeah, they can play pretty well and they tied a pretty good team. But now it's like they lost to a quarterback who threw the ball like 11 times against them.
Yeah.
And Justin Herbert with 75 ribs instead of like the 15 you're supposed to have because they're all broken into little pieces. the Texans for the rest of the year will not have a game where I'm like, this is one they should win. I don't think they should win any game.
And they beat them last year when they were in the playoff race. And that was the best that they looked last year. That's where all the faith in Pep Hamilton comes from. Rex Burkhead, for God's sake, was running all over the Chargers in that game. Like, that's the last time Rex Burkhead looked good. You would think going into this week, you would have any optimism. You're going up against a legitimately cursed franchise that has no luck. Nothing good ever happens to them. Hey, remember when they drafted Eli Manning and he didn't want to play for them? That happened. Yeah.
All-time great call by Eli Manning, though.
Honestly, yes.
I mean, we just read off he's probably not on the Manning cast if he gets drafted to the Chargers.
Yeah, seriously.
He made it excommunicates him.
Yes. Didn't the Chargers have a chance to draft him, too? Oh, excuse me. Didn't the Chargers have a chance to draft Michael Vick, too? I feel like it was close.
Well, Vick, I think Vick went number one.
He did go number one. I feel like the Chargers or something like...
They, like, lost on a coin flip. That's something that would happen to the Chargers. There's a coin flip to decide who gets the number one pick, and the Chargers lose it.
Chargers, Michael Vick.
They made the AFC Championship game with both LaDainian Tomlinson hurt and Phil Rivers playing through a torn ACL.
Like, yeah.
They're these all-time talented teams. One year they finished first in offense and first in defense, but last in special teams, and they missed the playoffs.
That's them.
That's just the most San Diego, now L.A. Chargers things ever.
They traded out from Michael Vick to get – they traded down, and they got LaDainian Tomlinson from it. I thought I remembered that correctly. I mean, it worked out. Like, that was a –
Yeah, they got a different Hall of Famer.
They also got Rashay Caldwell and Tim Dwight out of that.
Oh, then they won the trade.
The Rashay Tim Dwight. Rashay Caldwell? Tim Dwight. Super Bowl 34 hero. I remember I made a white Falcons t-shirt because I hated the Broncos back then, and I just, like, drew, like, 83 on it and was wearing that all week. Because I hated the Denver Broncos there. Yeah, they've had it rough. I thought to myself, like, maybe we should make a Chopped and Screwed version of the San Diego Superchargers song. It doesn't sound as cool as I thought it would. Because it's such a jaunty and upbeat song, considering what a cursed franchise. Like, it's not really possible to ruin it. But anyway, in honor of DJ Screw, here is the Chopped and Screwed version of the San Diego Superchargers song. You thought we couldn't get any lower our first week by ourselves. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. At Gallant says on Twitter, at Sean A. Mapes behind the glass. Coming out of Sunday's wretched quarterback performances between Justin Fields and Davis Mills, one man is being honest. The other is in denial. It's bothersome. You'll hear why next. But first, I got to tell you about my friends at Circa Resort and Casino. Guys, we are going there to watch Vegas and Houston play one another in a football game. And you got to join us. And you can join us by, guess what? Calling in and answering the following question. How many pools does Stadium Swim at Circa Hotel have? How many does it have? You answer that at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You will have a chance to go to Las Vegas with us, the Wheelhouse, me. There's a finalist every single day, and we're going to randomly select the final winner for the grand prize. So you get to qualify by calling in now and again, answering the question, how many pools does Stadium Swim at Circa have? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit hrp.net today.
Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Surprised by the text line on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Not going to lie, the chopped and screwed San Diego Superchargers was pretty tight. This is someone from the 281. Another from the 281. Definitely feeling this chopped and screwed version of the San Diego Chargers song. I don't know. I feel like the Twitch disagrees. E315 wanted to, I think, remove his eardrums after he heard that one. Should we play it again? Twitch.tv/ESPN975. This is from Clutch City. Why haven't we gotten Clay Walker chopped and screwed? That's all he's missing. Oh, don't give me ideas, guys. Don't give me ideas. Oh, yeah.
Paul Gallant Show exclusive.
It's the Paul Gallant Show, top 10. At number one, chopped and screwed, San Diego Superchargers. Okay. So, I've got a question. Why can't people be honest in the NFL? And look, I did say a little bit earlier, when it comes to being asked about injuries, I don't mind it when a coach is coy or cheeky, when a player does the same thing. I'm just trying to be the best teammate I can be. I'm just here so I don't get fined. I'm day by day. Like Bill Belichick and Mac Jones were saying yesterday about Mac Jones' high ankle sprain as they play the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. But what we have heard in the wake of the Texans' loss to the Chicago Bears have been two quarterbacks, both rookies from the 2021 NFL season, both struggled on Sunday. Let's start with what Davis Mills had to say about his performance against the Bears after their 23-20 loss.
I think we're in a good spot. Definitely progressed each game. I thought this past weekend in Chicago is probably the cleanest games we've played so far. So we're excited to keep improving on that. Obviously, we got to protect the football a little better. Can't be giving it away in critical situations. But other than that, I mean, just got to keep progressing forward and trending upwards. Yep.
What? The cleanest game we've played? What? Bro, you threw two picks. One was in the end zone. The other set up the Bears, who don't have an offense, for a game-winning field goal. Here's what Justin Fields, meanwhile, this week had to say about his performance.
Yeah, I just learned from my mistakes. And, you know, I mean, when you don't have a game that you want to play as well in, I mean, all I really know, my response to that is really just, you know, get back to work and, you know, keep working.
I mean, Fields is pissed off, and he hasn't had the best couple of weeks when he's been in front of a microphone, given that he said, like, yeah, you Bears fans haven't been through bleep. We're the ones that are working hard here. Actually, like, against the Packers at the very least. Yeah, they've been through a lot. But guess what? I mean, the Bears are off to a 2-1 start. Massive asterisk by the side of that, but so are the Denver Broncos, too, despite their offensive issues. Oh, God, it's so depressing that this team is up 2-1 and they've played a bunch of bums, at least to this point of the season. Anyway, Davis Mills got a follow-up question to his comments both post-game and yesterday at the press conference. Hey, man, why do you believe this is one of the best games that the Texans offense has played?
Offense and how we want to execute. I thought, I mean, we did that. I'm looking at myself, I thought I made it through progressions efficiently, protected the ball other than those two tips by the defense. Unfortunately, I mean, that just happens in football. Can't do much about it now. But, I mean, even like the last one to Rex, thought I progressed through the progression, nothing front side, got back to him backside. He was open, wanted to get him the ball, and just the defense lineman tipped it. So not much I could do there. But other than that, I think we're trending in the right direction.
We protected the ball, except for when we didn't, number one. And number two, I am not convinced that ball would have made it to Roquan Smith, who was sniffing out that Davis Mills in the fourth quarter gets a little bit panicky and likes to check it down. I am not convinced that ball makes it if it wasn't deflected. I think it would have gotten to Roquan Smith, who was breaking on the football. It's a little bit alarming to hear Mills talk about it in this manner. And I guess, what are you supposed to say when you're at a press conference when someone asks you, hey, do you suck? And then you say, well, no, I don't. Here's why. And then they're like, wait, what? As a follow-up question. And then you kind of double down. But he's legitimately poking holes in what he is saying as he speaks.
He's gaslighting us.
That is so true, Sean Mapes. Gaslighting is a massive problem in 2022. What is happening? What is going on?
Is Davis Mills toxic?
It does feel that way. If you're going to toxically gaslight me into saying or believing that what I'm seeing isn't real, I don't know if we can be friends. Who would have thought a left coast liberal elite from Stanford University would gaslight us in this manner? What is happening? What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. Pervasive values from the West Coast invading Texas. This is something that Lovie Smith has to do right now. He has to defend Davis Mills. And Smith did defend him at yesterday's press conference, talking about the thing that he answered my question with on Monday that he has gotten better with, is his pocket presence.
There's a lot of improvements he made. I mean, when I say improvement, I'm talking about all some of the little things that don't show up. Pocket presence, as I say it, the last two times that I stood up here. Pocket presence. He had a couple of interceptions on tip balls. So there's a lot of running our offense on what he's doing. A lot of times it just goes to the quarterback. It's a lot more than that. So from us and our evaluation of every play they've made, he's making progress.
I guess. It's very minimal progress. Lovie has to say that, though. You got to have your players back if you're a coach. But if you're a player, how do you feel right now? And I want to go to Pittsburgh for a brief moment. I think there's going to be a lot of parallels that you can draw between Mitchell Trubisky and Davis Mills over the course of the year, with the difference being that Mitchell Trubisky has a first-round rookie behind him on the depth chart and Davis Mills does not. Mike Tomlin's been adamant that Mitchell Trubisky is the Bears, excuse me, he's not on the Bears anymore, is the Steelers' starting quarterback going forward. But if you've been watching those games, a Pittsburgh Steelers team that has lots of good wide receivers, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, George Pickens, the star of the preseason, they're all looking pissed off and making comments after the game about their quarterback's inability to get them the ball. How is Brandon Cooks feeling right now? You could argue that, yeah, he dropped that pass against the Denver Broncos. Maybe Davis Mills shouldn't have as much faith in him as we do, but he was by far the best player on the Houston Texans this training camp. He was phenomenal at finding ways to create space for himself. And maybe Pat Hamilton's offense isn't helping him on that front, but he has 13 catches on 29 targets this season. And you have Davis Mills saying that after the game. Mills is saying, well, no, actually, we made progress. Actually, I didn't do anything wrong. The ball got tipped. I took care of the football outside of the two interceptions. If you're Brandon Cooks, who has been in this league, played with quarterbacks like Tom Brady and Drew Brees, what are you thinking to yourself? I mean, what are you thinking about the fact that you decided to sign an extension to remain here because you believed in Pep Hamilton or because you believed in this offense? How can you still believe in Davis Mills the same way? Accountability, it's not that hard. I don't want to have a quarterback that's telling me what I'm seeing isn't actually the case. I will take even Brock Osweiler saying, I have to be better in the National Football League, because in the National Football League, it is important to play good football in the National Football League. I don't know why he always said National Football League. It might have been like a filler word for him or something like that as he tried to compose himself, regain his thoughts. At the very least, Osweiler didn't lie to you. He said every interception has a different story. I don't think he's wrong. It was an annoying answer, but I don't think he's wrong. Mills is right now telling you things that aren't happening. I don't know how I'm supposed to buy into it. You're supposed to buy into it if you're going to NRG Stadium. Pinche on the Twitch asked, like, do you think the Texans are going to fudge the attendance numbers on Sunday? I bet they will. Even though this is a game that the Texans did win last year, maybe people show up. Like, I bet they will. And I feel bad for them. Like, they did, I think, do their due diligence this offseason trying to win people back in a way, outside of the whole almost hiring Josh McCown thing. We just forget about that. It's fine. But when you got a quarterback that is telling not just, you know, people that are listening in that press conference that, he's probably saying the same things to some of his players, or he's at least implying that like, this isn't on him. Who is it on then? You've had great protection, all things considered. You've had, I think, decent receiving, but you can't figure out a way to get the ball to your best guy, and you're saying that it's, you know, we made progress in a week where the offense had nice moments thrown over the middle of the field, but still having the same issues on the sideline. Drives me crazy hearing someone just lie. Just tell the truth. It's fine. Just say, I sucked. It's on me. I have to be better. Instead of saying, like, actually, we made progress. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next on the Paul Gallant Show. Myles Garrett probably should stop driving. Maybe hire an Uber, given his track record. And, oh boy, just when you thought that the Michael Jordan versus Scottie Pippen feud couldn't get any worse, we now have confirmed evidence of some freaky deaky going on. All of that next right here. It's the Paul Gallant Show. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Paul Gallant Show with Paul Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Featuring Paul Gallant alongside special guest Paul Gallant. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
But also you, because we are the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-3776 is how you call in. It's also how you text in. And by the way, caller number 3, 2713-780-ESPN. You're going to get two free tickets to see the Cougs take on Tulane in their American Athletic Conference opener on Saturday. Check that. It's tomorrow night. Thank you very much, Sean Mapes, behind the glass. Listen, you know, sometimes you need an assist from the producer because your boy, he just reads the copy. Guess what? A halftime performance with the UH Mariachi Pumas. Hell yeah. The Spirit of Houston. The ticket special for the game, $10 tickets while supplies last. Go to uhcougars.com/tickets or call 713-GO-COUGS to get your tickets today. All right. Myles Garrett is, of course, a defensive lineman for the Cleveland Browns. He used to play for the Texas A&M Fighting Aggies, and you might have seen the pictures from a car accident that he was in earlier this week, where supposedly on a slick road, you saw an animal darting across and the car spun out, flipped over a couple of times. He and the passenger in the car were buckled up and everything's all hunky-dory and we're just waiting to see when Garrett will be back at practice. But someone did a little digging and it seems like Myles Garrett actually might be part of the Fast and Furious franchise in the near future, because Myles Garrett has been stopped for speeding not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, not five times, not six times over the course of his tenure in Cleveland since 2017. Multiple tickets show Garrett was driving over 100 miles per hour, including one 24-hour period in which Garrett was stopped twice, once for driving 120 miles per hour and a second time for 105. That happened September 24th and 25th of last year, so almost a year to the date. The speed limit is 70 miles per hour. He was fined $267 and $287, a real slap on the wrist for an NFL player, for those infractions. He also was cited for driving 100 miles per hour in a 65 mile per hour zone of Interstate 77 in May of 2020 by the Summit County Sheriff's deputies. Blah, 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 blah. 91 miles per hour on I-71. Well, here's the thing. I actually don't have a problem with someone speeding on the highway. It seems, though, like the road that he was driving on where the car flipped over, this was not your routine interstate highway. This was one of those roads where you could easily see something darting out from behind a tree and into the middle of the road, and all of a sudden, yeah, you could see how somebody driving very fast might have to swerve. I am not saying that speeding should be allowed, but I do think that the speed limit is generally a guideline as long as you are not darting in and out of cars across the road. What I will say, though, to Myles Garrett is it might be time for him to have somebody else drive. Or to drive something less conspicuous. You could do something that's really smart here in Houston that I'm not saying to do. I just see it everywhere. Why not get one of those paper license plates? Pretty sure you can just print those off. Does everybody have a... How many cars on the road when you're driving, of all the cars that you see on the road in Houston, how many of them have a paper license plate, and not just a paper license plate, but a paper license plate with an expired tag? Maybe this happens in other cities, but as someone who has grown up in Massachusetts, went to high school in Florida, went to college in upstate New York, lived here, and lived in Seattle, this is the only place where I have seen paper license plates everywhere. I feel like every time I'm out driving, I will see at least three. And it makes me wonder about a great deal of things. Like, is anyone registered for their car here? How many people are actually have car insurance here in Houston? Drives me nuts. Because I am somebody that, like, I drive fairly safe. I probably drive a little too fast on the highway, but I'm not darting in and out of cars. I'm also not cutting people off. I feel like I go with the flow. And if the flow is going a little bit slow, I get in the passing lane and I go around. But what's up with this in Houston? Have you noticed this, Sean? All of these paper license plates, it's everywhere.
I haven't lived enough places to where it seems like a lot, you know, coming here. You'll see a few, I guess, from, the 20 minutes or 40 minutes that I drive every day. I'll probably see, like, I don't know, six or seven. Whatever. I always thought, wow, the car market's going good. A lot of new cars.
That's what I thought too. And then I started reading them and noticing, like, this is expired, and I bet you could just print one off too.
Well, I will say, as someone who recently got a car, they are very late sending the license plates.
Oh, that is true.
It'll take forever to actually send you the license plate. So may if it's like a week or so off, I give some leniency.
That actually, check that. I think when I changed from Washington plates to Texas plates after coming back here, I think they gave me the plates right away.
Really?
Where, and I could be confusing things, but yeah, when I was in Seattle, I actually had to wait a couple of weeks and then come back to the DMV to pick it up there, which I thought was annoying. But there are paper plates here everywhere. I have gotten in an accident with an uninsured motorist who lived in my apartment complex. And you know what happened, Sean? I was waiting to leave. There's one of those places that has one-way gates to leave. And I'm just waiting behind this car that had a bunch of suitcases in the back. And the car just goes in reverse and, like, plows into the front of my car. And I wrote down their information. Had a cop come. We went through it. I figured everything was going to be fine. I knew the apartment number that the person lived in. And they did not put their insurance on it. So I ended up being like out on, I think it's $250 on it. And I was like, they literally are here. It's garbage time right here. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant, the Paul Gallant Show. Let's hit it.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
That is something that drives me crazy. People are asking what part of town I see it in. Well, our station is located slightly west of the Galleria, and I would say generally in that area is where I see it the most, but I also saw it when I was living up in Oak Forest when I first moved back here. Okay, guys, we did it. Congratulations. Texas is now the nation's biggest emitter of toxic substances into streams, rivers, and lakes. Does that make you feel a little bit more nervous going forward, Sean Mapes, about the next time that you maybe go tubing?
Nah, I'll be fine.
You're okay with the toxic sludge on your body? The runoff?
Yeah, whatever.
It was a little bit alarming reading this, seeing that, like, oh, yeah, it could seep into your drinking water. Oh, great. Literal garbage time. How about that?
We'll be fine.
You think so? Okay, fine.
Yeah, everything's bigger than Texas, even the sludge.
By the way, one last thing before we hit the road in garbage time. Beto? I don't know how to say it. Is it Beto?
O'Rourke? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure. I honestly don't know. I've heard other people pronounce it differently.
Sure thing.
No, I'm not.
Tucker Paulson right here. trying to disrespect him.
I honestly don't know how it's pronounced. I thought it was Beto at first, and someone said, like, actually, it's not. And I'm like, wait, what?
I don't know.
Anyway.
His real name's Robert.
He's trying to legalize marijuana in Texas.
Let's go!
Let's go! Yes, you know, it's politics. Maybe don't, you know, lead with everybody else here. I'm not going to get into that. Weed, man. That's all I care about. I'm a millennial, and you guys all disrespect me. So, you know what? Just be who you are. Be consistent. Be a hater. Big thanks to everybody who tuned into today's Paul Gallant Show, our callers, our texters, our Twitchers as well. And, of course, Sean Mapes behind the glass. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Thursday. The Killer Bees are next. Peace.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.